Welcome to the FantasyGuru.com Franchise Focus Podcast. Now here's Matt Kemp, Joe Dolan, and Tom Brawley.
And it is time for another edition of the Franchise Focus Podcast here at FantasyGuru.com. Matt Kemp, Joe Dolan, and Tom Brawley with you today as we're going to talk some Philadelphia Eagles, possibly one of the most intriguing teams in the offseason, and they may not be done as we get ready for the NFL draft. Less than a month away, as we're hitting every single team before the draft gets underway. We'll finish up with the number one pick, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a week before the draft gets underway, and we'll have an idea maybe where they're going at that time. I think we all know, but we'll be hitting all the teams. We'll be talking Philadelphia Eagles today, looking forward. Well, you've been all been looking forward to the Major League Baseball season getting underway. It is underway, so don't miss your chance to join FanDuel.com before it really kicks into high gear. It's more fun than ever, and you can sign up now to play one-day fantasy baseball at FanDuel.com. The leader in one-day fantasy baseball for real money with immediate cash payouts. Entry fees start at just $1. Stop waiting 6 months to win a league. Play today, win tonight. Pick a brand new team any day you want. No season-long commitment and no upfront fees. Make every game exciting with FanDuel. And Joe, even early in the season, maybe you have a guy like Joe Nathan on your team, or you're like me, a Met fan, Henry Mejia already going to the DL. If those were supposed to be on your team, those guys would be on your team for saves. You got to go to somewhere else for FanDuel. You don't have to worry about stuff like
and
that.
And also, if you just enjoy hearing Vince Scully tell you facts about somebody that you might not know, maybe you'll catch Adrian Gonzalez on a day like the other night when he hit 3 home runs. If you had Adrian Gonzalez in your FanDuel lineup, moolah!
Yes, indeed. I was watching that game last night going, I wish I had Adrian Gonzalez in my FanDuel lineup.
Well, you know, it's like the first year in forever I haven't had him on one of my season-long teams. I should have used him in FanDuel.
Now you can, though. That's the thing. You missed him yesterday, you can still get him going forward. Eric Hafter from California turned a $125 deposit into over $62,000 playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Join him and the over 1 million other users who have already won money. FanDuel's paying out more than $2.5 million every single day this MLB season, but you have to play to win, so sign up today. Go to FanDuel.com and click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner. Use our code GURU and sign up now. Special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. Offers only good for the first 50 people that use our code GURU. Don't forget to use our code GURU. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. FanDuel.com. Sign up today. As we move into the talk here on the Philadelphia Eagles, we remind you, you can get your questions into Podcast of the Future or responses to the podcast you've heard. Use the hashtag Franchise Focus. Tweet them to us at Fantasy Guru Site, at the Matt Kemp, at FG underscore Dolan for Joe, at FG underscore Brawley for Tom. And we'll have about 3 or 4 questions on this podcast. No surprise on the Eagles and all the moves that they have made. And if you want to get your questions, like I said, use that hashtag Franchise Focus. It will get you on the podcast. So let's talk about the Philadelphia Eagles here, guys. We figured there could be some shakeups coming here, and we had some ideas of where the Eagles may go. Obviously, the name Marcus Mariota has been tied to them quite often, but a lot of other things happened that I don't think anybody saw coming. First of all, they trade LeSean McCoy to the Buffalo Bills. They get Kiko Alonso back. Then they trade for Sam Bradford and send Nick Foles to the St. Louis Rams. They do not bring back Jeremy Maclin. He ends up with the Kansas City Chiefs. And now we're kind of going, okay, none of this was exactly planned here for the Eagles. Not that it was a lock that Maclin would be back. You know he would be able to test the market. But those first two moves, Joe, certainly sent things into a bit of a tizzy. And I think it surprised many, even those close to the organization when this happened.
Those close to the organization, aside from the people, guys who were directly involved in these transactions were taken by complete surprise by it. And I don't think... knowing what Chip Kelly does, that should be too much of a surprise in all actuality.
Right.
However, I think people were overreacting on either side of the fence here when these moves were happening. Oh, it's a precursor for Mariota, and believe me, I was in that camp as well. Hey, it still may be, and we'll get to that. And then there were some people, oh, he's tanking the team because his ego's too big. I don't think that's the ridiculous deal either. And I think now that things have started to settle down a little bit, that people are starting to see the picture. And here's the picture that Chip Kelly, I think, sees with the Eagles from last year and what he is trying to adjust in that picture. Chip Kelly does not think his job is to be 10-6. Now, 10-6 often will get you into the playoffs, and if not for a terrible NFC South team getting into the playoffs last year, the Eagles would have been in, right. But they didn't make the playoffs. And in the playoffs, anything can happen, but Chip Kelly did not feel his team was good enough to make a real run to the Super Bowl.
Chip Kelly doesn't want to be the Bengals of the last 4 years, it kind of seems like. He doesn't want to plateau and be like, ah, it's good enough.
And as Nick Foles to Andy Dalton, not in terms of skill set, but in terms of the type of player he is, in terms of the tier of quarterback he is, are they similar?
I think
so. And we talked about Andy Dalton, and we discussed what his ceiling is, and I think it's fair to say, hey, Nick Foles is a guy who had a great season, no doubt, not taking that away from him, but the guy we saw last year is probably more of the guy he is. And, oh, by the way, he's never been healthy for a full season.
That's true. I mean, his short career.
So the question is now, is Sam Bradford that guy to take them over that hump?
This was a team, that is the billion-dollar question.
This was a team that won, and I keep bringing this point up to Eagles fans or people that don't know what they feel about this. They won 20 games with Michael Vick at this point in his career. He's not a very good quarterback. With Nick Foles. And with Mark Sanchez. I mean, you're talking average quarterbacks at best across the board, where they're at in their respective careers. And as Joe said, a 10-win team. Can they be a 10-win team with those guys, the talent they had? Yeah, probably again. But do you want to take that next step? Do you want to go, well, we're going to get in, and anybody who gets in the tournament, anything can happen. You don't want to be a team that says that. That's not your mantra. You want to be a team like the Seahawks or the Packers or the Patriots go, we get in, and we're going to have a home game, and we're not playing in the first round. Like, they don't want to be a team that, anything can happen.
You don't want to have to go to Lambeau and win. You don't want to have to go to the Clink and win. You want to be inside the link and win. That's what the Eagles want to do. And by the way, they had a home playoff game 2 years ago. And lost to Drew Brees.
That's right.
And the Saints. This is what's fascinating about it. And I think Sam Bradford is going to be one of the most talked about players. He already has been one of the most talked about players. It's very clear that Chip Kelly, in making this deal, in which he also gave up a second round pick, is making a deal to get Bradford because he truly believes, if you're go by Occam's razor, that Sam Bradford is going to be his quarterback. Oh, and that he's going to be a lot better than Nick Foles and or Mark Sanchez. That would be the simplest explanation for this trade. We can talk about Mariota hypotheticals at this point. They're all hypotheticals. But I think Chip Kelly believes Sam Bradford, if he is healthy, big caveat, is a guy who can deliver the ball from the pocket with accuracy and velocity. He can make quick decisions, something he excelled at Oklahoma, and in his early tenure in St. Louis.
And let's bring up that talk, you know, does Bradford fit this offense? And here's what I've heard. Well, he's got two torn ACLs now. He's not mobile enough to run this offense. And I kind of think that, once again, it's not what the offense really is. You don't necessarily need that guy to go run around and do things. And Bradford had some similar concepts at Oklahoma. And he went through three different coordinators in the Rams. That was, I don't want to say it's a wash, but it's really tough to get a feel for what Bradford is considering what he's gone through in his career already. I'm not giving him excuses because he has been shell-shocked by everything that's happened to him so far.
No, yeah, you don't want to make excuses, Tom. I mean, you can argue that Sam Bradford has had a rough go of it in the NFL for a variety of reasons. I don't think the St. Louis Rams are a particularly good organization. That's a team that's locked in perpetual 6-10 to 8-8 type of seasons. And that's what Chip Kelly is trying not to do. He's trying to instill that culture, that sports science culture. And he thinks a fresh start is going to help Sam Bradford. And Chip Kelly made this point. And I'm glad he made this point because it should be obvious. But if Sam Bradford wasn't injured, he wouldn't have been available. Because if Sam Bradford was healthy, ostensibly he'd be the Rams' starting quarterback. That's it and that's all. The Rams don't have to talk about it at all. The Rams don't have faith that, Sam Bradford can be their guy going forward. The Eagles do. It's a change of scenery trade.
All right, let's get to fantasy. Like, is Sam Bradford going to be a better fantasy option than Nick Foles? I mean, he's lost a weapon. Jeremy Maclin is now gone. They've added more at running back. It seems like Chip is going to want to run the ball even more this year than he has in years past. So can we really expect Sam Bradford to be an improvement over Nick Foles for fantasy?
If you go back in the last couple of seasons, you go back to Foles in 2013 and then Foles and Sanchez, you had guys, if you had the starting quarterback of the Eagles, you had a guy who was lineups. Yep. It didn't matter. I mean, Mark Sanchez was throwing for 300 yards more often than not. We don't think of that when it comes to Mark Sanchez. So clearly, things worked out well for Mark Sanchez from a fantasy perspective because of the offense he was in. It's the volume of plays that they run. That certainly helps things. He was the number 12 quarterback over his 9 appearances. Mark Sanchez was a number 12 quarterback. He was never close to that with the Jets.
He was the starting quarterback on fantasy championship.
Yes, as he should have been.
And we told you when Nick Foles broke his collarbone that Mark Sanchez was going to be the starting quarterback on fantasy championship teams.
Now,
because of the system.
This is a question here that we're getting these on Twitter from Doug_W_EL. He says, what is Sam Bradford's upside with Chip Kelly and the Eagles? And we can kind of double this up here because we get it from Softball Jesus as well. Can Bradford be a quarterback one, a perfect pairing with an Eli or a Palmer? So I think the idea is, first of all, I think we all believe he can be a legit fantasy starter. Now, as Tom mentioned here, and we'll get into it, we know they added DeMarco Murray. We know they added Ryan Matthews. Because you have added those players, is it really just to replace what LeSean McCoy was doing, or do we see the team run it even more and take something off of Bradford's plate, especially when you look at a receiving core that doesn't look very strong as we stand here before the draft?
Here is the interesting thing about Sam Bradford in Philadelphia. Everybody is skeptical. People in the Philadelphia media are skeptical. Eagles fans are surely skeptical. People in the fantasy industry are skeptical. And here is why I like, as one of our friends there alluded to, Bradford as a pairing with a guy like Eli Manning or maybe Ben Roethlisberger or something like that. It's because that's a viable pairing. Because Bradford is going to be available if he's the Eagles quarterback. I'm going to guess between the 14th and 16th quarterback off the board.
I would agree.
You are not getting that discount with Marcus Mariota. If Marcus Mariota were to end up in Philly, he'd be a top 7 or 8 quarterback off the board, I think, because people would believe in him in the system. I even think Nick Foles, if he had stayed in Philadelphia, would be going higher than that because Nick Foles has a track record in the system.
You know what he's done, right?
People don't believe in Sam Bradford, and I will be willing to take that risk if he is going at that type of spot.
Because it's a new team, because he's coming off the torn ACL again, and as I said, right now, the receiving weapons are not exactly strong on paper. But I think to your point, Tom, I think it's fair to bring that up, that there is more maybe influence on the ground than there on the offense there may have been. And does that intentionally take something off of Bradford's plate, maybe even early on? Maybe this is a team that runs it more early as you bring Bradford in. I mean, he did suffer that ACL tear before the season began, but it was still in the preseason. So do you think of that as in maybe it could be a slow start for Bradford and Philly as they work him in, depending on where he is in his recovery? I think they're expecting, and they made this trade expecting him to be ready to go for week number one, but could it be a slow start for Sam Bradford if he's the week one quarterback for the Eagles?
I think that's why you might be targeting him if you go with that two QBs, you know, in those middle to late rounds. If you go, you know, Ben, Eli, you go with those guys early in the season just to feel out the, you know, the process here with the Eagles. See what that offense is going to look like in those first couple weeks. So you have that fallback plan. And then you also want a fallback plan in case, you know, Sam gets hurt again. We've seen it plenty of times here. So that's why I can see targeting him, you know, if you're going to go with that two QB middle rounds, middle to late rounds, that might be your thought process with Sam Bradford.
As we go ahead.
This is just going to be absolutely fascinating. And look, Chip Kelly had said, oh, you know, there's going to be a shot for Sanchez to come in here and play. And Sanchez's contract is interesting because it's one of those kind of Josh McCown pseudo-starter contracts. it was very evident when Sanchez signed that deal that there was that he was getting paid a little bit more than you would think a backup would, but less than a starter. I think people assumed when Sanchez signed that it was just going to be because he was going to compete with Foles, or maybe Mariota was going to come in. They wanted the mentor. But now he's kind of a cushion for Sam Bradford.
What? Yeah, is he a best ball guy? Is he a guy you take in NFL 10s?
Especially if you take Ben Bradford.
Yeah,
no doubt.
That's a good point, Tom. Yeah, I think that's something you could look at. Now, we look at the receiving core here. They don't bring Macklin back. They're not able to re-sign him. He goes to Kansas City.
They did want him, by the way. Kansas City just offered him a lot more money. This wasn't a Julius Thomas in Denver situation where they didn't even make a phone call.
Macklin's a Missouri guy. He went to college there. He's an Andy Reid guy.
Maybe this came down to maybe an agent change as well for Macklin.
Macklin
I think that's part of it.
Changed his agent late in the 2014 regular season, and I can tell you for a fact that there was a very high confidence level prior to that switch that Macklin was going to be staying in Philadelphia.
Good rapport, I guess, with the agent, I guess
and
you'd say.
And the Eagles made a competitive offer for Macklin with his new agent, but Macklin decided to go back to Kansas City. And Macklin himself said it was either Kansas City or Philadelphia. Yeah. And it just the Eagles just lost out to a bit of bad luck here. Kansas City has Andy Reid. It's where Macklin's from. And they had a need at the position. And that's why the Eagles couldn't compete with the offer.
So what it leaves us with here, this is updated pretty much today. They just signed Miles Austin. You have Riley Cooper. You have Jordan Matthews. And you have Josh Huff. Now, this also brings us to another Twitter question here from Softball Jesus. What tiers do you put Jordan Matthews and Josh Huff? Now, I want to start with Jordan Matthews because I think there's some questions about what his role is and what it can be. There's some people that maybe didn't get to watch him as much or don't know his skill set or maybe haven't heard what the Eagles have said about him that believe, oh, he's going to be their number one because who else do they have left? It can't be Riley Cooper and Miles Austin is just a guy, but Jordan. Seems to me that they believe he's their slot guy, he's their number three, and there aren't really a lot of plans for him to really move outside and do much more.
I don't know if there should be plans for him to move outside and do much more. Jordan Matthews was almost exclusively a slot receiver last year.
92% of his snaps.
This wasn't a guy who moved inside, outside, made most of his impact in the slot. There was only one receiver, according to Pro Football Focus, who ran more routes from the slot than Jordan Matthews last year. That was Randall Cobb. Why, guys, would the Eagles change that?
Because Macklin left.
That's the one thing. He was a rookie. That's where you start him. Can he develop
into
more?
There's a question there, because now there's a need at outside.
But Jordan Matthews won consistently from inside.
Yeah.
And there were concerns about him coming out of Vanderbilt about his ability to win outside on press coverage. I don't think Jordan Matthews' role is changing a lot.
I don't
simply
think so,
because
either.
Of where he... Where
but I see where the question's coming from,
now,
because they have a need outside.
The targets might go way up for Matthews. Remember, Nick Foles, Matthews' production was very tertiary in this offense compared to some of the other receivers. With Sanchez, however... He was the number 19 receiver when Sanchez was on the field in fantasy points per game, 15.1. So he was a mid to low number two. Over the same span, Macklin was number 32. The question then here becomes, what is Sam Bradford going to do if Sam Bradford's the quarterback for the Eagles? And I think Bradford's a guy who will mix it up a little bit better than both guys. Nick Foles preferred to go outside the hashes, down the sidelines. Mark Sanchez preferred to work the middle of the field. I think the Eagles ideally want a quarterback who's going to go and mix it up all over the field.
Where do we – now let's talk about Josh Huff here because I know there's – you look now and you go, well, he's got to be in the mix. Who else do they have? What does this guy mean to this team? And, Joe, I know people in the organization have talked about they're very high on this guy, but – he's kind of an unknown to most people.
Yeah,
and
8 for 98 last year.
I mean, 8 for 98. How do you go? I mean, can you go from 8 to 98 to relevant reality? Can he be relevant for fantasy? Things could certainly change between now and the start of the season with the draft coming up.
Of course.
Where does he fit on this team right now?
I can tell you for a fact there are people inside the building at NovaCare who think Josh Huff is more talented than Jordan Matthews. Now, Jordan Matthews obviously was a polished player. This is a guy who had 900 receiving yards and 8 touchdowns as a rookie.
Right.
So, I mean, you can't take that away from Jordan Matthews, But Josh Huff has a dynamic skill set. He messed up a ton last year. A couple fumbles, drops. Remember, he also got injured, I believe, in the preseason opener, and it stunted his growth. So you have to take that into account. But there are some people who believe Josh Huff can do some of the same things that Jeremy Maclin did in terms of moving inside, outside, moving all around the formation, winning in the short, deep, and intermediate areas of the field. I think right now Josh Huff is a receiver that if I'm in a redraft, I would take as kind of my number four, number five. If I'm redrafting right now, with an eye towards upside, I can already tell you I picked him up late in my Dynasty League, and I plan on keeping him simply because I think this offense needs an explosive player, and I think Huff can be that guy. I don't think Cooper or Matthews are explosive. No, certainly not Miles Austin at this stage of his career.
You know, I don't blame anybody for buying into this offense because, you know, we haven't seen much from Huff, but, you know, we've seen what Maclin has done. We saw what Deshaun did. Anybody that's playing on the outside there in this offense can put up some major numbers. So I don't blame anybody for, you know, looking at Huff as a fourth or fifth receiver with upside to be a number two receiver.
Now, we'll get into the running backs here in a second, but as we look at the receiving core with the way it stands now with Austin and Cooper and Matthews and Huff, and we'll see what they do in the draft. We'll talk about draft targets a little bit. Doesn't this put the spotlight on Zach Ertz here? Doesn't it have to put the spotlight on Zach Ertz? Isn't this part of the plan here for the Eagles? They go, okay, we don't bring Maclin back. We understood that was a possibility. We don't have a real deep group here in terms of established talent, but we have a guy in Zach Ertz that certainly has the talent that you look at from a tight end to be a dominant receiving tight end. I know the blocking can be an issue, and Brent Celek, that's the big part of his game, and I know Celek played more snaps last year, but doesn't this put the spotlight on Zach Ertz to take a serious step up and maybe even be the top receiver for the Eagles this season?
The thing is about Ertz is I don't think he's a bad blocker. You look at the numbers on Pro Football Focus, and you're not going to be looking at Zach Ertz and saying, oh, woof, this guy's Jimmy Graham as a blocker. And Jimmy Graham's really bad, by the way. It's just that Brent Celek, you could argue, is the best blocker at the tight end position in the National Football League. And Chip Kelly values that. Chip Kelly loves Brent Celek, and it kept Ertz off the field, and it's really difficult to break out when you're the number two tight end on your own team. And Ertz, now look, Ertz outproduced Celek. He had more than double the receiving yards, almost double the catches. He had three touchdowns to Celek's one. It's just that Celek was playing more snaps.
He was the number 16 tight end at 9.1 fantasy points per game. You look at the snaps, Celek at 69%, Ertz at 50%, and so obviously they're on the field at the same time. We could see that there by those numbers. And as you said, you know, you look at the numbers here for Ertz, 58, 702, 3, and 87 targets in 16 games. Played every game. Nearly caught 67% of his targets. 12.1 yards per catch. And then you look at Celek, 32, 341 on 51 targets. 10.6 yards per catch, 62.7% catch rate. Not even close. But he was on the field more. You'd have to believe that almost out of necessity, we see more of Ertz in 2015. And when he finishes number 16, playing less snaps than Celek, you'd have to believe that there's room for growth here and that Ertz is a guy you'd want to be looking at in your drafts pretty seriously in 2015.
Let me ask you this, Tom. Do you like where Zach Ertz is going in NFL 10s among tight ends?
Okay.
Currently, he's coming off the board around the average pick of about 95. Which makes him an eighth round pick.
That seems a little
rich. He is the seventh tight end off the board in general.
Seems a little rich to me. Just because the Celek is still there, Chip loves him, and they added DeMarco and Ryan Matthews. They're going to run the ball a lot. It still seems a little rich for me. I'd rather get him maybe that 10th, 11th round where he's the 12th or 13th tight end off the board. Seems a little rich. Who else is going around at number seven?
Okay, let me throw this out there to you. Zach Ertz is going off the board right after Martellus Bennett. Martellus Bennett is the sixth tight end taken.
Fair.
But about 22 picks ahead of Ertz. So two full rounds ahead of Ertz.
Okay.
So there is that perceived drop-off after
divide.
Martellus Bennett. Ertz and Jordan Cameron are going at basically the same exact pick. I mean, there's like no divide whatsoever. Then Antonio Gates, Dwayne Allen, Delanie Walker, Austin Seferian Jenkins, Tyler Eifert, Kobe Fleener, and Eric Ebron. I feel like that's a tier where you can make a case for any of those guys.
That is true, but yeah, just listening to that tier, I'm waiting a couple rounds to get a tight end. I'm not reaching to get Zach Ertz 94. I mean, none of those guys really jump off the page. I'd rather wait a couple extra
rounds. Also, though, this format, I think, plays to Ertz because those big games play. Where he plays 85% of the snaps, you're going to benefit from those games. Like the game against Washington late in the year when he caught 15 passes.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's the kind of talent he has. So I think Zach Ertz, if I'm looking at these numbers right now, better I feel like he's probably going higher in the format than he will be going in redraft leagues.
All right, now let's get into the backfield. So they trade LeSean McCoy. Okay, surprise. Then they up the ante, and they sign DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews, two of the bigger names
Remember
that
when
were available.
Frank Gore was an Eagle?
That was – they never. I guess he never really was. But
I had to return my jersey.
You did, Tom? Yeah. I wouldn't have expected that. Frank Gore decides, I'm going to Indy. So the Eagles turn around and go, okay, we'll sign Ryan Matthews. And, oh, wait, we get DeMarco Murray too? Okay, sure. Let's get them both.
Remember that this was maybe the most interesting thing that happened this offseason when a lot of interesting things happened when we were waiting for the shoe to fall on DeMarco Murray. And I think there was a time when there was a big assumption that he was going to go to Jacksonville just because they were going to offer him the money and Jacksonville had a clear need. And you know what? I wouldn't have blamed him for that.
Hey,
go get
paid. If you're a running back,
you're anybody, go get paid. But if you're a running back, go get paid.
And they're a team on the rise, too. I mean, they are still the Jaguars, but they are a team on the rise. They had money to spend. And then it looked like for a little bit, Dallas is going to be competitive and maybe Murray wants to win. Or the Raiders are still floating around on the fringe and they had a ton of cap space. And
Raiders, please, anybody. We want you.
And the first time I really considered that it might be a possibility in Philadelphia is when Adam Kaplan, who is a friend of the site, he said, this is real, guys. And that was when I was like, wow, that really surprises me. Because I wrote a big piece on LeSean McCoy that was about 4,000 words long about how Chip's getting off before McCoy falls off the cliff because he's too expensive and this and that. And then he goes out and he signs somebody who's not as expensive but almost as expensive and is just the same age and who's just coming off like a 500 touch season. So it made everything I wrote completely irrelevant. But the fact of the matter is, simply, DeMarco Murray does more things that Chip Kelly likes than LeSean McCoy did. DeMarco Murray's going to put his foot in the ground. If he gets 4 yards blocked for him, he's going to run for four, maybe 5 or 6 yards because he falls forward when he gets hit. And I don't think Chip Kelly went out and signed DeMarco Murray to this contract to give him 400 touches. I don't think it's going to happen. And you have to take that into account when you're drafting for fantasy. And I think the signing of Ryan Matthews as well confirms that. But what I think Chip Kelly wants to do here is he wants to sign backs who are going to keep the offense on schedule. And while the Eagles ran 70, 71 plays per game last year, most in the NFL, I think Chip Kelly wants to run 75, maybe 80. And he thinks Ryan Matthews, DeMarco Murray are going to be two backs who are going to help them into second and medium, like second and six, second and five. And when you're in those situations, your playbook expands hugely.
Do you remember 2 years ago when Kelly took over and LeSean McCoy was getting all of those touches and a lot of us grabbed Bryce Brown in the eighth round going, okay, at some point, Bryce Brown has to be involved. There's no way they can keep this up with McCoy. And they pretty much kind of stuck with that the rest of the way. And then, you know, last year McCoy did not play as well and he wasn't as busy. They added Sproles to the mix. This is kind of what we were thinking 2 years ago here, guys, where, yes, you have DeMarco Murray, but now you have a legitimate guy that could step in to take out if Murray's getting a breather or, you know, maybe there's a game, it's a long season, you go, you know what, Matthews is going to lead the way today. You know, we'll have a couple games like that. This reminds me of 2 years ago when you go, okay, the Eagles are going to run the ball a bunch. They have McCoy and Brown. Brown really didn't do anything. Now you have two guys that are capable of doing so. And, oh, by the way, you have Darren Sproles as well. I kind of see now that happening 2 years later because you have a better backfield to handle that kind of offense, especially the volume of plays.
What do you think the split's going to be, Tom? Because there's going to be one. They signed Matthews to a nice contract.
250 carries for DeMarco, 125, 145 for Matthews. I think somewhere in that
range.
And
then Sproles sprinkled in.
Sproles with 50 to 60.
If you want to talk in percentages, my working number this year has been 55, 25-20. And I've been thinking it's almost going to be like the Packers with Lacy and Starks, where Lacy will get the first two series of the game, and then they'll bring in Starks, who can come out and look like he shot out of a cannon because he's fresh. And I think that's almost going to be what it's like with Murray and Matthews. Remember, the Eagles operate really quickly, so I don't think, and I could be completely wrong, and often am with Chip Kelly, I don't think this is good. We're going to be seeing an active rotation in the thick of a series with Murray and Matthews.
They're going to get their own series probably here and there. Do you see, let's say, just break it down real simply. Most games, Murray getting in the area of 18 to 20, Matthews being in the area of 8 to 10 carries. That's what I kind of feel like it can be.
Sproles will get the third down and long yardage work and maybe the hurry-up work.
And he'll be working as a returner as well. Let's not forget that.
One of the things that helped DeMarco Murray for fantasy in Dallas last year is he was the hurry-up back, too. So, dump off, dump off, dump off. Oh, Romo wants to take a shot down the field to Dez. Oh, Dez is double-covered. Boom. Dump it off to Murray, 7 yards.
You also got to remember that DeMarco was really good down by the goal line. He scored 9 touchdowns inside the 5. That was an area where LeSean McCoy was coming off the field. So
Chip Kelly didn't trust him.
He can supplement his value down by the goal line.
Murray needs somebody else out there with him after a 400-plus touch season. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, he got through last year. Injury-wise, the hand thing was more of a fluky thing than anything else. But he got through okay. Yep. But we know there is a pass there. And, you know, it's something that has to be in the front of your mind, not the back of your mind. It's got to be there, especially after he was so busy last season. So you have Matthews and you have Sproles there. It doesn't all have to be on Murray like it was in Dallas last year.
My assumption is instead of a consistently dominant fantasy back, and Murray was dominant last year, I think you probably end up having just a very good one. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I just want to discuss this with you guys. And now take into account that some of these MFL 10s data, this is before free agency that these were coming in. So maybe you assume Murray's back in Dallas or he signed somewhere where he's clearly the guy. Maybe you project a similar type of role for him. He's currently going off the board around the 10th overall pick, the 5th running back, ahead of LeSean McCoy. And among all these other names, would you guys make that selection? You are on the clock. You're at the 10th pick. You are only given 2 options. You have to pick DeMarco Murray or LeSean McCoy. Who are you picking?
I'm taking Murray, but I'd go to choice 3 and probably take a wide receiver before both of them.
I see Murray finishing somewhere in that probably 5 to 8 range for running backs this year. So, going about 10 is pretty fair.
Do you think he'll go in with those expectations? Do you think most people go, okay, I'm taking him knowing where he was last year? Do you take him going, okay, I'm expecting him I would be happy if he finished among the top 8. Do you think people are going in with that, or do you think people are going?
They should be.
Okay.
They should. I don't know
now,
if they will.
If Murray is a top 5 pick,
I wouldn't
be
surprised.
I like him.
Because I feel like the momentum might start building for him.
You can have him in the top 5.
I like him in that 10 spot. Yeah. I kind of like him there. I wonder if somebody will take him at 5, knowing what Chip Kelly's offense can provide. But here's another issue with DeMarco Murray. Ryan Matthews is not going to be drafted as a handcuff this year. This is going to be very similar to the Arian Foster-Ben Tate scenario from a couple years ago, when people assumed, correctly at times, that Tate was going to hold some independent value outside of Foster, and it made handcuffing Foster too expensive. And my argument was at the time, if you're going to take Foster in the top 3, it'd be nice if you can get Tate, but you cannot strap yourself into making sure you get him.
And what is his ADP for Matthews?
Matthews?
Right now?
Yep. He's the 33rd running back off the board. Okay?
So that puts him probably
7th, 8th round, which is extremely similar to where Ben Tate was going a couple years ago. Now, once again, some of that data comes from before free agency, and couple of these drafts were probably also for that short period where it looked like Matthews was going to be the Eagles' lead back.
Now, also, let's talk about Matthews, though, in this kind of format, because you would have to think that if Murray were to go down, or as I brought
up, he's going
to
have more value.
Right. He's going to have more value in this format, so it would make sense. Now, where does that leave us with Sproles? Because I don't think he's got. Now, is his role maybe more defined now?
Honestly, I'm not sure Darren Sproles is a whole lot different than he was last year.
Right.
Yep. 57, 329, 6 rushing. By the way, Chip Kelly preferred Darren Sproles at the goal line.
I know that.
Sean McCoy. Okay? Darren Sproles weighs 113 pounds. 4387, zero receiving. That might surprise you. Those numbers, when I look at them, that surprises me with how productive he was.
As a rusher?
Because he wasn't a consistent fantasy option. I don't know if his numbers change all that much. I think that's a reasonable expectation for him.
So, yeah, he's not really going to be
a guy. He's a flex at best in the PPR and probably more of a
number four or
five. Probably more of a, I'm stuck, all right, now I can get some catches out of Sproles is what you hope for. So, that could drive us nuts at times, but I think we've pretty much hashed it out as much as we can with that backfield. I think we know where we're at with backfield now.
I think the Eagles signing Matthews here is a move that's going to work out for both parties here. I think this is a great move for Matthews.
Move for his career, yes. Yeah. I would agree.
They've both had doorbell issues.
And
so
what happened?
Get fewer touches.
Ryan Matthews, when the Chargers, Mike McCoy came in and they said, you know what? We know you can catch. But we're not going to make you do it.
Right.
We're going to limit your snaps. You're going to be playing 40 to 50% of the snaps. He had a career year.
Is that almost what the Eagles are doing with Murray after that high touch?
I think going to catch the ball. I don't think he's going to catch it 60 times.
Right. You don't need him to be what he was last year is the point is that we're getting at. I think
they probably want him to do more than McCoy did in that department last year.
Yes. I think that's certainly the case. Now, let's talk before we get into the draft, O-line and defense here because – they have been making some moves on the O-line. There's been some trade movements out there. But we know this O-line is very important to the offense. And they look for a specific kind of player, looking for those big, not necessarily huge, but athletic guys. And you know, you talk about the Cowboy O-line being a strength of the team. The Eagles want the O-line to be a strength of the team. And Murray and all the production he had last year with all the touches behind one of those great O-lines, maybe the best O-line in football – where does he go to when he now plays behind this Eagles O-line? Because it's a different kind of O-line, but still pretty good, although they're going through some changes.
Fantastic run-blocking offensive line last year, despite having a ton of injuries. No Todd Harriman's. Harriman's was the weak link on the line last year anyway, guys. And really respected player, but it was time to let him go. The concern I have here is more long-term. Number one, as we talk today, and this could change later today, who knows, Evan Mathis is still on this team.
Right.
So I'm not sure. The Eagles have had no qualms about moving on from guys. They cut DeSean Jackson. They traded LeSean McCoy without any hint. But we've been hearing hints of a Mathis trade
for a
long time, and they still haven't moved him, which to me says they value Mathis more than they value the money that cutting him would free up. If they're going to move him, I think it's going to be for a trade. And maybe they move him at the draft or something if they feel like they can replace him in a pretty good offensive line draft. Jason Peters is getting up there in age, but you do have arguably the best center in football in Jason Kelce. You have arguably the best athlete at the tackle position in the NFL in Lane Johnson. And you have Jason Peters. As we stand right here, I still think it's a pretty good line, but the Eagles do need depth at this position. And they didn't
probably address that early in the draft here, you would think. That and probably the secondary here.
Yeah,
Continue to strengthen that secondary.
Absolutely. I think it's a position of need for them. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them spend their first-round pick on an offensive lineman, to be completely honest with you.
Now we get into the draft and defense here, upgrades that they have made. We talked about a big need for them was at cornerback. Well, they just kind of flip-flopped with the Seahawks, and they got the upgrade.
They flipped
They got the better end of that deal.
Yes, they did.
I think they also got the much more expensive end.
Yeah, well,
I think Byron Maxwell is a really good player. I think Eagles fans need to temper their expectations. I don't think they're getting Richard Sherman here. But I think Byron Maxwell should provide them with much more consistency on the back end.
Over at Kerry Williams, who's now in Seattle.
Bradley Fletcher. Fletcher went to New England. It's going to be interesting to see what their idea for Brandon Boykin is, because they also signed a smaller corner in Walter Thurman.
That's right.
Who knows Chip Kelly from his time at Oregon. Are they going to let Boykin compete to be on the outside?
I was going to say Boykin has been their nickel guy.
He's been their nickel guy, and he's really good. And see, here's the thing is the Eagles think Boykin wins inside. So that it's the same type of philosophy I have with Matthews. Do they want to keep Boykin?
Yep.
He's a strength.
Yep.
Do you want to make that not a strength potentially?
Yep.
So that's why I think people are wondering what they're going to do with Boykin. Now, on most teams, you would think, oh, Boykin's earned a shot outside. Very well might have. He very well might succeed there. But in the Eagles' minds, they think they have one of the best nickel corners in the NFL. and they want to keep him there. We'll see what happens, though. I think edge rusher is a priority for the Eagles in the draft, although one of the more surprising moves was that they re-signed Brandon Graham. He was another guy. Everybody assumed he was gone to get more playing time somewhere. Well, now he's a starter.
We know they were in on Devin McCourty and couldn't get the job done there because the Patriots were able to bring him back. They need a safety. So this brings us a couple of questions as we get into the draft. From Go Gilfish Go, who is a player not named Mariota the Eagles could trade up for? And then the Fanta Reaper, with the Philly quarterback situation, do you think they try for Brett Hundley in the second round if they don't get Mariota? So first of all, Mariota, let's make this clear. Not dead yet.
I am not writing the obituary for Mariota to the Eagles.
Do you have a percentage on this, Joe? What do you think the
10% maybe?
It's in play.
I'm not writing the epitaph until Mariota is buried on another team. That's just the way I'm
looking. Would he have to fall for them to get him?
I think at this point, and this is
they're not going to move up to that 2.
Well, they can move not to 2, but they can move up though. Saying.
How far down would it probably have to drop for them to make a move?
5, 6. There's still the talk about Bradford with the Browns. We've heard from multiple sources, including our guy Adam Kaplan. The Browns did offer that first-round pick. Chip Kelly wasn't BSing when he said he was offered a first-round pick for him. So we know there is smoke here. I am not writing off Mariota on the Eagles until he's on another team. Bottom line, that's it.
And let's make this clear here. DeMarco Murray, Sam Bradford was kind of a happy coincidence there. The Murray to Eagles thing was kind of in the works before Bradford ended up there.
Do you know what that was also? Murray got a nice contract from the Eagles. He can go to a good team behind a good line, and probably a little bit he can stick it to the Cowboys. All of that had much more of a factor, in my opinion, than the fact that Sam Bradford is currently on the
point is, if Bradford ended up in a trade elsewhere, it wouldn't be hurting DeMarco Murray's feelings to the point that he'd be pissed off.
And let's discuss this as well. I think the Eagles are far more likely to trade back if Mariota's not an option than they are to trade up. Now, maybe they find an opportunity to get a Breshad Perriman. Or maybe Kevin White slips a little bit and the Eagles make a play for him. Maybe Amari Cooper slips a little bit. I don't really see anybody else, maybe one of the corners that they can move up a couple picks for, that the Eagles would actively trade up for. Because I think their needs, receiver, corner, edge rusher, offensive line, it's a good draft for all of these positions.
Right.
The Eagles can trade down and reload. Remember, they dealt a second-round pick next year for Sam Bradford. Maybe they can add another pick this year to help make up for that. Maybe add a pick next year. I think that's more of a possibility. If there is a legitimate chance Mariota can go to the Eagles, I fully expect the Eagles to make a play. I would be surprised if they traded up for anybody else.
Yeah, and the second part of that question, I don't see them going after Brett Hundley. I just don't see it unless he would fall to the third, fourth round. But he won't. But he's not going to.
And see, but here's the weird thing. The Eagles, if they don't get Mariota, they already have, in my opinion, a pretty strong quarterback depth chart. Look, say what you want about Mark Sanchez. The guy's one of the best backups in the NFL.
Sure. But both of these guys now under contract only through 2015. Let's remember that here.
So they might want to get a product.
Well, they signed Sanchez to a multi-year extension.
Well, as I'm saying, well, you have Bradford as your top guy, I should say.
Yeah.
Is only on contract through one more year.
The thing about Bradford, by the way, not being extended, I'm not sure it makes sense, really, for either party here. The Eagles, number one, need to know if he can play. Yeah. Number two, Bradford's like, I'm getting paid a crap ton. Why would I restructure? Here's the fact. The fact of the matter is this. If Sam Bradford plays well, neither team is going to want to leave this
neither relationship. Neither side, right, yeah.
So there's, and he could be franchised. They'll sign him to an extension. So there's no urgency to get a deal done here. I don't think that in any way is telling of a potential deal for Mariota. I think it's an interesting little side note. I don't think there's an incentive for either side to enter into a long-term agreement at this current stage.
So that'll pretty much do it here for the Eagles podcast, a supersized edition, as you may expect, with a very busy offseason. A lot of questions still heading into the draft and the rest of the offseason. We appreciate your questions. You can get them in for responses or for future podcasts using the hashtag FranchiseFocus and tweet them to us at FantasyGuruSite, at the Matt Camp, at FG underscore Dolan, at FG underscore Brawley. And once again, we got to tell you that MLB season is underway, and you got to get involved with FanDuel.com. Sign up now before the season really kicks into high gear. Entry fees start at just $1. You can play today, and you can win tonight. There's no season-long commitment and no upfront fees. And you're not tied to anything, Tom. You put a lineup in today, works out well. I'll do another one. Put four lineups in tomorrow. You really have all the flexibility you want. And that makes it more fun, and that's why we play fantasy, for the fun of it. It shouldn't be a job or a grind.
Yeah, my fantasy teams are off to a slow start, and there's some guys I wish I had on my team. Hey, now they can be on my team. I just go to FanDuel and go set a lineup.
Eric Caffer from California, he turned a $125 deposit into over $62,000 playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Over 1 million other users have already won money, and FanDuel's paying out more than $2.5 million every single day this MLB season. But you have to play to win, so sign up today. Go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and use our code GURU to sign up now. Here's the special offer for new users. For every dollar you deposit, FanDuel match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. That's a bonus of up to $200. Offers only good for the first 50 people that use our code GURU. Don't forget to use our code GURU. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. FanDuel.com. Sign up today. So as we're finishing things up here, this will end week number two of our Franchise Focus podcast. Two more weeks to go. They'll be all completed, finishing up with the number one pick, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, on April 24th. You'll have a whole week to digest everything. If you need to catch up, you could do so before the draft gets underway. Catch the pre-draft podcast with John Hansen and Greg Cosell, the pre-draft rookie report that Joe and Tom put up. And you can get on the site now. For the rest of April, the early bird special is still in effect. $24.95 gets you the entire 2015 season. And yes, if you sign up now, you will have plenty of content, as I just mentioned, leading all the way up into August and, of course, draft stuff and into the season as well. So for Joe Dolan and Tom Brawley, I'm Matt Camp. Thanks for listening to another edition of the Franchise Focus podcast here at FantasyGuru.com.